Welcome back, everybody, to MVP Podcast. We are on show 724.
I
honestly
idea.
Lost track, but we're going to start over. It's 2021. This is the first episode of 2021.
Thank God.
I know. We were just going over analytics of what we did in 2020 and the followers that we've gotten and views and all that stuff, which is, I'm super happy to hear it. I'm glad you guys are enjoying these things. If any of you that are listening want to see something specific, because we bring in guests that just I find interesting, Natasha finds interesting. And when I say I find interesting, Natasha finds interesting, because let's be honest, you find most of these guys. I'll give you credit where credit is needed on that one. If you guys have any ideas of what you just want to hear and just want to hear us interview somebody that is important or interesting to you, just let us know. We'll leave our contact information everywhere.
Or if you just want to come on the show.
If you want to come on the show, let us know.
Yeah.
You're in. It's a very hard criteria to get on the show.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely not.
But yeah, we're excited to see the traction. We're excited to see you guys enjoying the show, gaining new followers every show. But we brought back Steve, Credit Repair. We actually brought him at the end of 2020. But half of the show got cut off, so that was our error on that one.
Oh, my God.
But we brought him back talking about the same thing, credit repair. He actually talked about how you can call him toll-free.
Toll-free.
But you can talk to him for free, just a consultation. He'll give you advice. He'll tell you where you should go. He's got a humbling story, which we're going to tag into the notes, a little video on him about where he came from and the downfall part of the middle of his life.
And he's very British.
He is.
So there's that.
So that was fun to listen to.
Yes. I always enjoy it.
But yes, he is from England. And he talks about when he came to the US and the American dream and his path. That's how we kind of open up the show. But I'm going to let him tell it. So let's just jump into the show.
Awesome.
Okay. You probably tell from my accent that I was not born in this country. I was born in England. And 25 years ago, I made the decision, good or bad, to come and live in America and live the American dream. And it was a great idea at the time. And for many years, it turned out to be exactly that, the American dream. My speciality was basically, or is, finance. And what I've done over the last 25 years, or for most of those 25 years, is build six different financial organizations entirely from scratch, from ground up, so they became profitable entities. And I recruited, hired, and trained and managed somewhere in the region of 7,500 staff during that time. So obviously came over here and was doing great. In 2006, I was in the mortgage industry, still in the financial industry, and I built my company up to 400 different loan officers from scratch, and the market was moving in a very, very aggressive manner. Houses were being sold, and people were reselling the houses that they bought an hour previously. It was just crazy.
Yeah.
2006 to middle of 2007 was really a gold rush, and to be honest with you, I think not a single hour of the day went by without me earning commissions. That's how well I was doing. And literally, we were just taking orders. You know, people were calling up. We didn't have to sell them anything. They just wanted either a refinance or a purchase. And things were amazing for about a year and a half. Middle of 2007, I began to see some very worrying warning signs in the marketplace. A lot of lenders were offering something called stated loans, which meant that anybody could apply for a loan and say that they earned absolutely any amount of money. It was never checked on, and the mortgages and the refinances were granted based on a stated loan. And I just kept watching stated loan after stated loan after stated loan going through. But inwardly, I kept thinking to myself, well, okay, you're a hairdresser and you're earning $40,000 a year and you've just bought a $3 million California property. And it may be great for 29 days, But come day 30, there's no way in hell that you're going to be able to pay that mortgage.
Right.
And so what people were counting on, obviously, was buying the house and selling it within 28 days. Unfortunately, the market responded very badly to that. And what happened, if you remember, in 2008, we had a huge mortgage collapse. And it affected everybody in our industry, including me. So much so that I lost everything. I went from being extremely wealthy to having nothing in the space of about 8 months. In fact, things were so bad, I ended up being homeless. And I was homeless for somewhere in the region of, I would say, just under a year.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was hard for me. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I learned some extremely valuable lessons during that period. You know, people that I thought were true friends of mine weren't friends at all. They liked me because I was successful and I had money. The minute I started losing that money and losing that success, guess what? I lost them as friends as well. So it taught me a lot of stuff. And eventually I managed to get out of being homeless. And the way that I did it, for the first time in my entire life, was basically studying credit. Because credit is something that I've ignored all my life. I never thought I needed it because I'd always earned a hell of a lot of money. Money always came to me. I never worried about it. Didn't really think about credits. I mean, I had a couple of credit cards, but I maxed those out. But I wasn't ever worried financially about anything until the collapse came. And that's an interesting sideline because I believe there are a lot of similarities between that period and what's going on right now. So essentially, I taught myself credit because that was all I had to do all day. I had nowhere to go, nothing to eat. So I would pore over every bit of information I could on learning the credit game. And it was that got me out of the homeless situation. And ever since then, I've gone on and built other financial organizations that were larger and even more profitable. But the main core of what I do is credit repair. And basically, it taught me how to master the credit game and really understand it and help other people who are in a similar situation. And that's where I am today. I actually own 3 different businesses. One that does business loans. One that does credit repair and one that does personal loans. And I'm about to open company number 4 at the end of this month, and we are going to specialize in doing business credit, which is a completely different animal. And that's my backstory.
Kudos to you for taking advantage of an opportunity. I mean, some people might be down in my company. I mean, for one reason or another, didn't work out. I'm homeless. And then they get into the downer side of it.
Yeah.
And you took it as, hey, I've got a bunch of free time. I'm going to learn a new craft. And then obviously it pays off for you. So kudos on that one. That's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And also to let you guys know, I'm not religious and I very, very rarely talk about religion. But I do believe with all my heart there was a reason I ended up homeless other than the money situation. I had to learn a lot of lessons. And to be quite frank with you, I wasn't a particularly nice person back then. My wife would tell you I'm still not a nice person. But I was very ego-driven. I had a lot of money. I was very flashy. And I didn't treat people particularly well, in all honesty. So it makes you think that period of a year was also a mental readjustment that was forced on me.
Yeah.
And maybe turn out to be a different person, which is what I am today.
Yeah. The humbling lesson. I feel like everybody throughout their life has one humbling lesson that just sticks with them forever.
I agree. And, you know, if it's a motivator to do well, you know, then even more so.
Yeah.
But the biggest lesson I took from that, the biggest lesson that I carry with me to this day, is that if you're going to do something or build something or grow something, do it with a passion bias, not with a monetary bias. So, in other words, be in business to want to help people, truly help them, not because of the money, but because you know things and you can do things to help the common man and woman, by the way.
Yeah. So it makes your it makes your days a lot more enjoyable.
Yes, it does. It really does.
That's awesome. And I appreciate the whole background story. And there's a couple things you said that I wanted to kind of unpack a little bit. So you said in, if my timing's off, you said middle of 2007, people were just taking out loans and mortgage companies were just letting them go. What was that? What did people know, or what were the banks telling people that they thought they could do that and it was a good idea?
Well, the thing is, it's funny because after the mortgage meltdown, you saw a number of very unusual things. You saw customers coming on the television and local media blaming loan officers. You had loan officers coming on the television blaming the lenders, saying that the lenders were too frivolous, they didn't check on enough stuff, and the lenders were blaming the customers. So it was like a ring of flame that kind of went round. But to be quite frank with you, and I think anyone who was in the mortgage business in 2006, 2007, 2008, they'll all tell you the same thing. They all had a clue what was going on. They all knew it wouldn't last, but they all wanted to party like it was, you know, the end of the world, if you like.
Yeah.
So everybody was complicit. Everybody turned a blind eye. And everybody benefited from it until they didn't benefit from it anymore. And then everybody got badly burnt.
Right. And was that, I mean, after all that happened and we're trying to recover as a country, was there fear of a bailout not happening? Did they know they were going to be secure because the government was going to come in and bail them out? Or how, I guess.
What a very interesting thing that you just said, and very few people pick up on it. The government, if you remember, did bail the banks out. Yep. However, at the time when they were bailed out, the government also said this is a one and only time bailout. Now, I really didn't think the banks were depending on it, but it was a question of either the economy totally collapsing or the banks being bailed out, without getting too political. This time, I think the situation is completely different. I think that if banks are going to fold, and banks will fold, I don't think there's going to be any government bailout, to be quite frank with you.
So this is going to be a whole different
turnout. Yeah. I mean, just look, you don't have to be an economist or a historian or a genius even to look at this. Just look at the stock market for a minute. The stock market has gone up and up and up. Why? We're in the middle of COVID. Businesses are out of fashion. They're closing down. People are losing their jobs. They can't afford to live. And yet the good old stock market is going up and up and up. What does that tell you? It tells you that it's inflated. And by the way, the stock market is utilized by various individuals to make a lot of money. Don't kid yourself.
Oh, yeah.
It's highly inflated, which means that any minute now, it's going to pop. And when it pops, it's going to be such a bad pop, we're going to wish it was 2008. I truly believe that.
Ooh, that is scary.
It is scary.
You've predicted a lot of things.
It doesn't make me feel good.
You've predicted a lot of things that have come to fruition, and that one I hope doesn't. But
I hope it doesn't too. And the one thing I will say in defense of that being totally wrong is that as I'm speaking to you guys, I'm talking to you from the heart of Los Angeles. Los Angeles is one of two capital cities in America, the other one being New York, or financially capital. And so we do see things slightly differently from the middle of the country, in all fairness. So what I'm telling you is my view from California, if you like, the fifth richest country in the world in terms of GDP. Whether I'm right or not, I don't know. But I can tell you with California, 100% I'm going to be right. 100%, I have no doubts.
Yeah. It's scary.
It's very scary. And the fact is, look at what the government have helped us out with. Two checks in, 9 months?
Yep.
For a total of $1,200.
Right.
It's a joke.
Right. Yeah. Do you think another one's... I I truly think another one's going to come in like February, March.
I hope so.
Well, you could be right. And, you know, again, I'm not talking politics. I'm steering away from them. But there was a hint that Biden was going to add another 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, big deal. 3,200 in what, a year?
Yeah.
I mean, when people got the 600 a couple of weeks ago, they were jumping up and down with happiness. And I'm thinking, are you guys crazy? But that's what happens when you piecemeal bailouts.
Yeah.
And government money. We're happy to get anything.
Yeah.
So the question is, the major question people should be asking themselves right now is, what am I going to do when I run out of money? Because if you're not asking yourself that question right about now, believe me, you're in serious trouble when it happens.
Yeah. Well, the good news is I ask myself that every day. Like, I always look at the worst case scenario. Like, if I lose everything, what am I going to do? So I guess in that regard, I'm happy that I have that thought in the back of my head.
Before we get too gloomy, because it's easy to get true. Gloomy.
I'm feeling pretty gloomy right now.
Yeah,
it's gray outside. There's snow. It's cold. And now we're talking about losing all of our money.
Yeah.
Right. Happy Friday, everybody.
Before we get too gloomy, there is a very, very famous saying that people should also remember. And the saying is this: in every crisis, there exists opportunity.
And your example of that, your crisis was losing your companies,
and
your opportunity was starting the next one.
Exactly. So here's the point. The point is that people with good credit, and I hate to mention that word, but people with good credit, say 700, 750, 800 credit, guess what? Those are the people that can reach out to the banks and the credit cards and start getting money together to start building new businesses or start making profit or even buying property while the market is down. So if you have the money, which is exactly what happened in 2008, if you have the money then, people can capitalize on a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think that Amazon are capitalizing at the moment? Because they sure as hell are.
Right.
Would you agree?
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
There are companies out there that are part of the chain supply that are making money hand over fist. So it's not all doom and gloom, but it's a question of, do you have the money to reposition yourself? Do you have the money to save yourself? Do you have money to put aside for an emergency fund? You know, these are all relevant questions.
Yeah. That I know in this, I know this is our second podcast. We had mentioned this on the first podcast. But we talked about how much more exciting, how much more people would benefit if talking about their financial worries or strengths or where they wanted to go, if that was more commonplace or common talk rather than, did you see that Kim Kardashian and Kanye West are getting a divorce? Let's talk about that for 2 hours.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, look, you know, we did talk about that, I remember, and I was telling you, I wanted to share with you guys a story that I know about a character on YouTube called Mr. Beast. Now, Mr. Beast is 20, I think he's 23 or 24. I think his real name is Jimmy Williamson. Very, very interesting character. He is the first YouTuber ever, wait for this, to earn over $1 billion from YouTube.
What?
Not 1 million, 1 billion.
Yep.
Now, if you ever watch his videos, by the way, they're fun. He blows up stuff, you know, he puts stuff in swimming pools. He does all these crazy things that are fun to watch. But why is he YouTube's top earner? Because if the world was right, people who offer strong financial advice, people who offer financial resources, people who offer financial assistance, those should be the people that you're tuning to on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Not how to put rubber ducks in a bath and stupid things like that.
Yeah.
But the problem stems from finance, and it's funny. I call finance the old man's disease, and I'll tell you why. So I don't know about you, but I can tell you about me, and especially where I come from, which is England. So if I'm ill or there's something wrong with me, The very last person I would go and see is a doctor. Don't ask me why. Maybe it's a British thing. I think it's more a man thing.
I think it's a man thing.
Right. Well, guess what? We're all exactly the same when it comes to finances. And the reason for that is when we went to school, we learned algebra, we learned geography, we learned whatever, geometry. None of those things are of any value to us today. Mm-hmm. What we should have been learning is finance, how to balance a checkbook, how to get a credit card, how to do your taxes, what's the difference between a W-2 and a 1099. Just basic financial information that will start your journey off in a positive manner. But there is no financial education for kids. So the question is, at what age do you actually get a financial education? And the answer to that is usually when you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Sadly, that's the answer.
Yeah. I mean,
and by then, it's probably too late.
Yeah, because you're in a hole. And now you're learning about what you should have done when you weren't in a hole.
There you go. Absolutely.
I know that from living it.
Yeah.
So... There was a time where I could have been one of those people that went into a bank and said, "Hey, my credit score is, I think at its highest, I don't know, mid sevens." Had some family stuff happen, and took on the debt from a relationship, and my credit score tanked. Man, if I said 500, I'd be happy. And I'm like, I'm on the way out of that currently,
nice.
But like the credit repair thing and how credit worked and the do's and don'ts of credit cards and all that stuff was done after I was in the hole.
Right.
And I'm not even at the bottom. I'm falling. That's what I'm learning about it. And then I keep learning and then I hit rock bottom and then you dig out.
See, now you have what we would call a very standard story. I don't mean any insults by that.
No,
we hear stories like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But let me give you another angle of a story that may surprise you, because this also applies to a lot of people today, though. So we had a client who called us about a month ago, and this was their situation. About a year ago, they had a 760 FICO. Now, if you don't know what that is, a 760 is a pretty decent score. 800 is a great score. 760 is not far off the 800. So they had great credit. And as a result of that, and they pretty much looked after their credit and managed it and done a good job. And then what happened was, over the period of the last couple of years, they applied for about 8 different credit cards because their credit was so good. And they actually got all 8. So they had, now this is amazing, they had a credit limit of $130,000 between the cards.
Hmm.
Okay? Then they used most of that, and by the way, on each card, the most they used was about $4,000. So their utilization of the credit cards was very low, but they took $4,000 from 8 cards, that's about 30 odd grand, and they used it to open a business. A few months later, and the business had just started, and it was a restaurant business. A few months later, COVID hit, and they had to close the restaurant. But that's okay, they were still very cautious with money. And then a few days after the restaurant closed, they got a letter from Amex. And the letter from Amex said, "We know you've been a good client. We know you've paid your credit card every month. We know you've got great credit. But we are taking your credit limit down to your balance. And the reason that we're doing that is we feel that there's going to be a run on credit cards." Okay, so this guy, in the blink of an eye, on his Amex card, went from a credit balance of $15,000 he could have spent, but he only spent about 3. Amex brought that limit down all the way down to $3,000. So now he'd maxed out his credit card.
That looks good on your credit report.
No, it
doesn't. Yeah, but that's okay because he's got 7 more credit cards. Oh, guess what? Within the space of 2 weeks, this guy maxed out every single one of his credit cards because of what went on. Now, his business is not open. It's still not open, so he's got no revenue, and now he's facing almost bankruptcy. He went from a 760 all the way down to a 610, and I think at the moment he's a 580.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
That makes me so nervous.
Yeah. So I guess the moral of the story is be prepared.
Yeah.
What's your plan B? Because bad stuff can happen to you, and if you don't have a plan B, you're screwed, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it almost makes me want to say, hey, if you're out there listening to this and you are completely fine with where you're at, give Steve a call so he can think of a plan B for you just in case.
Yes.
Yeah,
so everybody listening to this should call you to think of at least a plan B.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, if you remember from the last podcast, I told you, and I was very clear about it, my job is helping people. I'd love that everybody I spoke to became a client and signed up with us, but that's not realistic. And instead, what I'm offering is, and we can do this at the end of the podcast, I'll give my phone number out. If anybody has a question relating to credit or finance and I can help them, I'll help them free of charge without any cost.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
I know, I'm great, aren't I? I'm kind of like the Father Christmas of credit. Yes.
You are.
And very humble, too.
Oh, very humble.
No, we will definitely get your number and contact information out to the viewers so they can give you a call. That's a tremendous offer. So hopefully we have some people that take advantage of that one, because that is not easy to come by. So thank you for that.
I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm here to help and offer advice if people want it. And if they do, then, you know, just call and we can have a chat. So, you know, and that's the way that I handle business.
Yeah.
People, you always find that, you know, if you look after people, business always comes back to you. Always.
It is true.
Yeah.
It is true. I guess this is a good thing to ask at this point. Who are your typical clients? Are they the super wealthy? Are they kids right out of college? I don't know why, but that was the polar opposite for me.
That's it.
Like, you've got you're ultra rich, and you've got, hey, I just graduated college, I've got nothing.
I'm gonna tell you who our average client is, and you are, both of you, I think, I don't know if you'll be amazed by this. When I first saw this pattern, I was a little bit surprised, but now it gives me so much pleasure. So our major clients on average are females aged 35 to 40, and they are predominantly African American.
Interesting.
And the reason why I love that is, you know what? It's a rise up, educate yourself, and lead type of environment. I think it's wonderful.
Sure.
I think it's wonderful that African Americans care about their credit, about finances, and want to build companies. You know what? It's a great, great thing. God bless them. And, you know, the women that I speak to are predominantly powerful women who want to take control of their financial lives. And those are predominantly our clients.
Good for them.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I really, and also, funnily enough, I have seen a big rise of, and this is obvious, African American women owning credit repair companies.
So, all right.
It's seeped through to the industry, and it's a great thing to see. It really is a great thing to see. Honestly, I love it.
Just empowering people all over the place.
Well, it's, look, I always say a dumb woman is smarter than the smartest man. I've always said that.
You got that right.
I've always said that.
Natasha just perked up when you said that. She's like, yeah, she was definitely agreeing with that one.
And it gives me, especially in our environment, especially with the BLM issues, especially with the the way that the African Americans are treated in this country is disgusting. So it gives me so much pleasure to see them say, you know what, we're going to educate ourselves and we're going to rise up, and we're going to rise up the right way. And that's why I love it so much. I got to be honest. I'm very passionate about that.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And it just goes with doing what makes you feel good, not just going after the dollars. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Going more into how you help out your customers, is it a step program? Is everybody different? Is it a system that you put people through? Is it?
That is a great question. Usually we follow a system unless someone is completely different. So just to let you know how we work and what credit repair actually is, because I don't think people quite understand.
They throw the word around.
So, first of all, the credit bureaus, the three credit bureaus, are not owned by the government. They are all independent companies. Financial companies and run at a profit or a loss. So they're not government controlled. But what they are is they are controlled by three specific acts. So in other words, you may think the credit bureaus can do whatever they want, but actually they can't. They're just like the rest of us. They have to follow the paper and they've got to do everything legally and legitimately. What that means is if any credit bureau is reporting anything incorrectly, and when I say anything, I don't just mean the amount you owe. Maybe they've got the wrong account number, the name of the wrong creditor, they've got your name wrong, they put things on your credit report that doesn't belong to you. Our first stage, usually, is to challenge those errors. That's the very first stage. Once we challenge the errors, we wait for the bureaus to respond, and then based on their response, we challenge them all over again. And we do it three times, usually. Sometimes we try a little bit harder because the bureaus are also human. They screw up and they miss things. So we'll keep going. And then after the third try, we do something called a credit boost. So in other words, we should have got rid of all your negative comments on your credit report. Now we have to boost your score. And the way to do that is by various secured cards and loans and doing different things. And we have an array of those that we give to our clients to boost their score. So the first thing is to fix any incorrect items, and the second way is to boost their credit score. Typically, clients stay with us for a period of about 3 months, and that's usually how long it takes to get from a 590 to a 680, I would say, or even a 690, about 100 points. It takes us about 3 months on average. Now, there can be things on your credit report that can complicate issues and make it last a bit longer, such as medical collections, student loans, bankruptcies, repossessions. These are things that maybe take a little bit longer. Now, the funny thing is, and we talked about this last time, and I'm going to repeat it because it's important, is that in the next few months, the credit game is going to change completely.
I'm glad you're hitting on this because you mentioned on the first show, and I was hoping we could touch on it.
Right. And actually, I made a whole video on my YouTube channel about it. So,
Do you mind if we link that into the show?
No, not at all, if I could remember the name of the channel.
We'll get it after the show. We'll make sure that it's linked onto the notes so that people can go and watch it on that one.
Okay. And actually, my video channel also has the whole story of when I was homeless and what I did. And, it's a little bit lengthier than what I mentioned with you guys. But anyway, so the big news is, in the next couple of months, you are going to see something called FICO 10. And this is the game changer. So FICO 10 is different from any other FICO model that's ever existed, because what they're going to start doing is they're going to break down your credit card payment over the last 2 years. So on everybody's credit report going forward, you're going to see on every credit report every month your balance outstanding and how much you paid. Are you with me? Mm-hmm. Every single month for the last 2 years. So if you've just about been paying the minimum on your credit card, your credit score is going to drop tremendously.
What if you pay the whole amount off?
Hold on. The worst thing that can happen is if you've had a late payment during the last 2 years, then trust me, I'm going to pray for you. Because it will be, I won't say impossible, but virtually impossible to get it off your credit report. So a late payment in a couple of months that you had maybe a year ago, you went through a bit of a bad time a year ago, you missed a payment, and now you're thinking, well, it didn't hurt you so much. Guess what? In a couple of months, it's going to hurt you tremendously. So the ability to get your, or the need to get your credit repaired before then, so it doesn't show up on your new report, is absolutely essential. Especially if you're thinking of buying a house, buying a car, doing anything that involves, or even moving apartment, anything that involves you having your credit ran, you got to do something about it right now and not wait. You know, that's my warning, and I can only warn as many people as I speak to, but right. At the end of the day, that's the truth. And you can research it. Do a Google search on FICO 10.
FICO 10. And what was the reason for FICO doing this now? Was there...
FICO are the three bureaus. FICO is the Fair Isaac score. The three bureaus, TransUnion, Equifax, Experian, they're businesses just like any other business. Do you think that the bureaus want you to have good credit or bad credit? What do you think?
I think they want you to have bad credit.
Of course they do. Because then they'll send you sell
one
your
for
information
one.
To banks and finance houses, and those are the people that can charge you treble interest.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, it's in their interest to make sure your scores are not high. Now, you should also bear in mind, 70% of this country at the moment have errors on their credit report. 70%. So now you know why credit repair is so in need at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's going to affect everybody. And not just that, but if you're a realtor, if you are a car salesman, if you are a manager of an apartment complex, you're going to see less foot traffic as a result of all this.
Yeah, I'm just imagining in the real estate world, people trying to buy houses come the spring, they got
right.
their pre-approval, they're out house shopping, and all of a sudden... They go to actually get something that's underwritten, and they're like, hey, your credit score actually changed, and then they're out.
Yeah, that's it. You've
got it. So it's going to be a little bit disappointing for people that are house hunting.
Right, exactly. Not just that. I mean, even people don't understand. They run credit on virtually everything nowadays. My buddy just got a job as a sales guy. Just a normal sales guy of a very well-known company, whose name I'm not going to share. But, I mean, it's a pretty good job. They ran his credit. And they told him in the interview, if his credit was any lower than 650, he would not be offered the job. So employers are running credit. Apartment complexes are running credit. That's apart from realtors and car dealerships and everybody else you can think of.
Yeah.
So... There used to be a show in England. I don't know if you've got any English listeners. You probably haven't. But there used to be a very famous show on television called The Prisoner, which is a mind-boggling show, believe me. It's like somebody had been smoking drugs for like 50 years and then written a TV show. It just, none of it ever made sense. But at the start of this show, the narration would be the same. It would have a picture of this guy, the star of the show. His name was Patrick Magoon. And this voice would say, you're not a name, you're a number. And guess what? Today, to all these companies, you're not a name, you're just a number. That's all you are.
That's scary. It reminds me, do you ever watch Black Mirror? Natasha, have you watched
this? Yeah.
So Black Mirror, there was one episode on there where everybody in Black Mirror, they got the name because it's all based around, I would relate it to like a Twilight Zone of this generation.
Yep.
They're all kind of creepy, great writing, mind-bending shows. So this one episode, everybody gets a what they call a social score. So we're all sitting down for this podcast. Steve is saying some great things. You're saying some great things, but I'm like holding the show back. So you and Steve would rate me and give me a negative 20, but you guys rate each other positive. So when you go into the elevator, like your phones go off and you can see your social score with this other person's social score. And your social score, you can move into these neighborhoods. You can get these jobs.
Right.
You get, you have to get this car because your social score is this low. And it's super creepy. But then you think back and you're like, oh, that'll never happen. But then you're like, wait a second.
It kind of does.
It kind of does. Yeah. So it kind of polarizes the things that we don't think about in like a entertainment kind of way. But then you sit back and you think about it and you're like, we're not far off.
Right.
Well, okay. So let me tell you how this all pieces together so that you understand it. I don't mean that in a condescending way, but I'm going to piece it all together.
I didn't take it that way. We're good.
Good. So... Have you been to your local bank lately?
Yes.
Actually, inside your local bank.
Credit unions count? Because I don't go to banks anymore.
No, credit unions don't count.
No, then I haven't been to a bank in forever.
I have it the last month.
Who do you bank with?
It's called Bank 59.
Okay.
It's a small bank.
I mean, headquarters in Oakland.
I should be a little clearer. It could apply to those banks, I don't know, but I'm talking about the major banks Chase,
no.
Wells Fargo, B of A. Okay, so I'm a member of Chase, and I'll tell you this. Every time I go into the bank, there's one less teller there. Every single time. In fact, banks are closing physical locations like it's going out of business. Now, why? Why are they closing it? Because they don't need humans.
Nope.
Think about this. You have a credit score. When you go to the bank for a mortgage or a loan, there's no one sat there talking to you about what you do for a living and how you're doing. Everything is done by computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it works on your credit report and your credit score. There's no human intervention going on here. Every time you want a loan, it's decided by a computer, not by a person. Every time your credit limit is raised or lowered, by a computer. So typically you need credit scores for the computer systems to work to make sure that they get rid of all the people who work in banks and replace them with computers. Guess what? It's the future of technology, and it's going to happen in other industries apart from banking. It's already hit banking tremendously. So if we have a system in place that just relies on your number, not who you are or what you do or where you come from, then we don't even need to speak to you. Now imagine, let's take this a step further. Imagine that computer looks at your application for a mortgage, reads your credit report, and it's full of errors, and they deny you based on those errors. That would be tragic.
Yeah, the AI won't pick up on the errors.
There you go. Another reason why credit repair is very essential. And you'll hear me talking about this a lot. When I talk about credit repair, I'm not talking about, hey, you've got to become my client and I'm going to save the planet for you. I don't care who you go to, but if your credit is in difficulty, go to someone. I don't care who it is. Go to any company that's reputable and knowledgeable. Talk to them first. See how they can help you and get it fixed before it's too late.
Yeah. And for the listeners that do want to do something about it, when they're vetting out different companies, what are things that they should be looking out for?
Well, okay. So I've been in the credit game, as I said, since 2008. So that's, 10, about 15 years. So there's certain credit companies, you know, for some reason, credit repair is a very hot item at the moment. So there are some credit repairs who say to you, we can fix your credit in 30 days. Do me a favor, guys, if you see an ad like that or you speak to someone like that, stay well clear of them, because there is no way legally, ethically, and humanely you can clear everybody's credit in 30 days. It just can't happen that way. And by the way that it usually
But we live in an instant world, Steve.
Right. And people are attracted to that. Do you know how many last year we counted, we did an audit, funnily enough, last night we counted that in last year, 2020, we had in the region of about, throughout the year, about 2,500 different clients. Okay. Of those 2,500, wait for this, close to 1,750 of them came to us from other credit repair companies. So in other words, they'd already spent the money with other credit repair companies. The companies hadn't done anything, and they ended up coming to us as a second or third choice. Hmm. Just be very careful. If people say things to you that sound too good to be true, then genuinely, it is too good to be true. So your credit, no company that guarantees total credit repair in 30 days, even 60 days, is lying to you. You can take that to the bank, literally. Yeah. Also, any credit repair company that wants a ton of money from you up front before they've done anything, stay well clear of.
Yeah. And I was going to ask on that one, is there some sort of fiduciary, like, setup that you have where this credit institution or credit repair company is working on your behalf? Or are they... Because I know that in other financial realms, you've got your fiduciaries that are working in your behalf. Others are their own private company trying to gain revenue. I didn't know if that's...
No. Everything we do is with fiduciary responsibility. Okay. By the way, we're also governed by the DOJ, just so you know. The Department of Justice.
Yeah.
So you have to be pretty licensed and bonded and secure as well. So these are all things that maybe your clients should, your listeners should ask when they first approach a credit repair company.
Yeah.
Are you licensed? You know, blah, blah, blah. And also we have, we're all over Instagram, we're all over Facebook, we're all over YouTube, we're all over LinkedIn. If you sign up with a company and you can't see any of their stuff anywhere and their website looks bad, that should be a warning sign as well.
Right. Right. I mean, with how accessible you can make your information online these days, and it doesn't take a lot of cost to do it, if you don't have some sort of online presence, I do get weary.
Right. Quite right.
And it's
quite
all
right
about the pretty graphics, really.
It is about the pretty graphics. If they don't have an awesome logo, don't go with them. If their colors aren't great, don't do it.
I just like making them look pretty. So, yeah, I mean, they've got to have a footprint. Absolutely,
right.
They've got to have a footprint. And also, do they have recommendations from other clients? I mean, whenever clients are happy with us, we always put recommendations out there, what we did for them, how we did it, and stuff like that. And I think also it's accessibility. If you join a credit repair company, how accessible are they? If you've got questions, if you want to ask them things. Most credit repair companies, just so you know, are in the business of repairing credit. That's it. We are in the business of credit enhancement as well. So we don't only just repair it, we'll give them, you know, access to special cards to boost their credit, as I said, or loans or things like that will boost their credit as well. So that typically people tend to stay with us longer because we're usually looking after them and pointing them in a good direction.
Yeah. And it's funny that you brought up the secured card. I did not know that those existed until I needed them. I had no idea.
Well, I know. Yeah. You probably didn't know. Yeah, exactly. So, and again, not all secure cards are good to get. You know, you've got to get secure cards that report to all three bureaus.
Right.
There's a company we use called Rent Reporter that now you can start reporting your rent, and that also boosts your credit. So
I did not know that.
There's a jewelry club that we work with that also boosts credit. There's a number of different lines. So we're not just in the business of repairing people's credit. We're in the business of boosting and enhancing their credit. So at least it's near the 700 mark as possible.
So I need to back up. I'm hung on this whole rent report.
Oh, God.
If we didn't have just a few more minutes, we would talk the next half hour about this.
Yes, we would.
So with me being in property management, like, that would be a huge tool for those people that are looking to buy homes and trying
Absolutely.
To build credit. So, like, a little in a nutshell, how does that all work?
Well, it's funny because, and we call them affiliates. So most of our clients last year and even this year have come from our affiliates being loan officers, realtors, people like yourself, property management people, car sales people. As I say to all these vendors, if you have a client that you're working hard for, you pull their credit, you see that it's not where it should be to qualify them for the product, pass them over to us. We do credit repair on them. We will give you your own funnel so you can follow their progress on a daily basis. You'll see which trade lines we've disputed, what we've done, how we're looking to build them up. And more importantly, you'll see their credit score on a daily basis. So the minute it hits the magic mark, you simply take them out of your system and they're good to go. I have two loan officers in particular. One loan officer based in Maine, because he used us last year, earned $40,000 worth of commission that he'd literally written off because people didn't have the right credit score. And then I've got another guy in Southern California, funnily enough, who's referred, I think, close to about 40 people to us, 25 of which he's already got back. He's managed to do refinances and purchases on. So he's also made a lot of commissions. So, yeah, companies use us that way. And we deal with the client directly, so you don't have to get involved in that aspect. As I said, we give you access to our software so you can see exactly where we're up to on every client.
That's awesome.
Very cool. It is. I like talking to you guys. You make me feel awesome. When you leave me on the podcast, after the podcast, I don't feel quite as awesome. Aww. But while I'm talking to you guys, I do.
No, you are. You are.
We like you.
Thank you.
No, it's. I love talking to financial backgrounded minded people because as much as I'm interested in it and I love reading about it, you'll never know everything. Like, I have not talked to a financial or anyone in that industry and not learned anything new.
Right.
Because things are changing so fast and there's so many different facets of it, and I enjoy it.
I know.
So,
we'll have to talk to you again in a couple of
darn.
You know, one thing that we did talk about, I think, on the last podcast, but not on this one yet, is really preparing your kids. You know, I know you've got a 6-year-old, etc.,
yep.
But preparing your kids for future life.
Yeah.
And I am telling you that you can start building your child's credit from a very early age. My 21-year-old has an 800 credit score.
Wow, that's awesome.
Already. Never had a job, got no money, he's got an 800 credit score. How did he do that? I make him an authorized user on every card that
yep.
I've got.
Oh, that's so smart.
Yep.
So that's simple. So simple, simple. But really, really effective.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that, like, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Start building them up. I mean, imagine they start life with an 800 credit score. What a fabulous way to start your life.
Right?
Your first car, they treat you like royalty, your first apartment. What a wonderful thing. And that's really what a progressive parent would do for their child.
Oh, I'm so going to do that.
That's like one of those...
I'm so excited now.
Well, one of those simple life hacks right there that will pay off in the long run.
My mind is like blown.
You've gone to heaven with that one.
Oh my goodness.
But, you know, at the end of the day, everybody in this business calls it the credit game. Because in all fairness, I know we're dealing with human lives here, but it is a game.
Yeah.
And the more rules you know, the better you can use it for your own personal benefit. It's as simple as, it's horrible to say that, but that's the reality, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's bad to say. I mean, if I was going to play somebody in, I'm not going to say soccer because you would dominate me in soccer. I know that's your sport. I don't even have to ask. I know that's your sport.
Yeah. You're right.
So
yeah.
If I was going to play you in basketball, like, I might have an advantage because I know more of the rules. I'm by no means going to go in the NBA.
What about baseball?
I was going to use baseball. Baseball's too easy.
I'm a little white guy of 5'7", so.
We're pretty close. We're pretty close. We're both not going to be point guards. So if I'm playing you in basketball and I know more rules, I'm,
yep.
I mean, obviously things can happen. But if you're going to put money on something, you're going to put somebody on, or put money on the person that knows more of the rules. Like if I'm going to challenge you in soccer, you're probably going to beat me because I know that I need to go towards that goal, and I need to pass it to the guys in the same uniform. That's about it.
But you know, all these great people through life, the Steve Jobs of the world, you know, the Elon Musks of the world.
Did you see Elon Musk just passed up Bezos?
Yeah, I know, I saw that.
You say it's so sad.
But all these people have one thing in common. They know how to leverage other people's talent. And I look at credit repair as just a leverage tool. You know what? It's same as me. I'm not a tax accountant. So when it comes to tax time, I'm not going to do my own taxes because I'm not a specialist. It's not my area of expertise. Mm-hmm. My tax accountant is the specialist. Will I pay him for it? Absolutely. You know, because he knows more about tax laws than I'll ever know. So everybody has their purpose. But as I always say to everybody, the thing that people get most confused about is this. When I ask them, what is the difference between rich people and poor people, everybody says money. Obviously, rich people have lots of money, poor people don't. That's not the major difference. The major difference is knowledge. Mm-hmm. Rich people know what to do. They know who to go to. They know which stocks to buy, generally. They've been financially educated. And usually it's passed down from generation to generation. Poor people didn't get an education of finance at school,
right.
Don't know any of this stuff, and they're the people that are being hardest by the system. You know, in every system, and I hate to sound pessimistic, but in every system, the success of the system relies on a large percentage of people not understanding that system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly how credit repair is. Exactly. You know. And it's funny because the difference between your access to money today and what it could be in 3 or 4 months' time can be very, very different. And all it takes is a phone call to a credit repair company.
Like you.
Well, like, I'm trying not to say like me, but yeah, like me.
Humble. Very humble.
Yeah, I'm trying to be humble. I'm really trying. Now, one thing I should also tell you, because I want to get this in, it is important. Come the end of January, I'm about to launch this sounds very conceited, but I know it's going to be true. I'm going to launch one of the most comprehensive business credit and business building packages the country has ever seen.
That's awesome.
So business credit, by the way, is totally different to personal credit. You know, and you can get, funnily enough, you can get 10 times the amount of business credit than you can personal credit. It's just knowing how to use the system.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a partner. We're going to open a company that not only deals with how to get business credit, but also how to actually scale and run a business. It'll have sales and marketing components, website components. It'll just go on and on and on. It's a very comprehensive package for businesses throughout the country. So just to give you the heads up on that.
Yeah. No, that's exciting. And I think that's where the focus, because I'm forcing you to come back for another show. So you have no choice in this one.
No.
But when that all get launched, we've got to get you back on. We're going to talk offline about when a good time for that to be is.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to learn about like the little nuances of that and how that can help our viewers who are, because I mean, in our area, we do have a lot of self-employed small businesses. So for those people around us, how can they get in contact with you, or if they feel like they've scaled or they want to scale after this COVID thing is done and they're back working and there's a lot of positive energy going on, how they can scale it and how you can help them?
Well, first of all, let me give you my direct phone number.
Yes, that's just what I was going to ask you about.
Okay, so I'm going to give you two numbers. If you want to call, if you're running out of money and you want to call me toll free, the number there is 888-702 FICO.
Nice.
And FICO is 3426, by the way. So it's 888-702-3426. 626. If they want to get me directly, my number is 818-620-5317. So they just want to call and have a quick chat about business credit, personal credit, or anything that we've covered today. I'm more than happy to spend some time with people and not charge them anything, by the way.
That's awesome. An amazing offer. We'll make sure to put all of that contact information into the show notes. We're going to tag that video that you said earlier. We'll put that in the show notes to make sure that people can get a hold of you. And again, anybody that is just curious, you could be in a good position or a bad position. If you are curious, call Steve. Great guy. Humble. And he'll help you out.
Yeah. Great guy. Not a great basketball player, but great guy.
Well, awesome. I wanted to keep it to an hour. We just ran over. So I have to end it here until next time. But I'm hoping in February, early March, we can have you back in. You can talk about the new entity that you have and how that's going to help.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My
pleasure. I appreciate it.
And if you guys, sorry, if you guys want to reach out, not just you guys, but if anyone wants to reach out and send us an email, the email address is fixit, F-I-X-I-T, at compassionatecr.com.
Awesome.
So fixit at compassionatecr.com, and that'll get directly through to me.
Awesome.
Great.
That will be in the show notes as well.
Well guys, as last time, I've really enjoyed talking to you guys. You are excellent interviewers.
We enjoy talking to you. I'm sorry that we only have one show to show for it, but we'll be in. We'll get you more shows.
My pleasure.
All right.
Pleasure.
Have a good weekend.
Have a great day, guys.
You too.
Bye.
All right. Bye.